Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Blaine Barton welcomes Windows Azure technical evangelist Brady Gaster to the show as they discuss Windows Azure websites and how this can greatly benefit IT pros who manage their company's web presence. Tune in and learn about this great new service, as well as what happens underneath the hood when you spin up a new site in Azure, and how this would compare to what you might normally do if you were to deploy it via your own servers. Blaine, the mic is yours.
Hello and welcome to IT Time Radio. I'm your host, Blaine Barton, TechNet Radio that is, and we're here with a special guest. We have Brady Gaster on the line here and on the show. How you doing, Brady?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Doing good. Welcome to IT Time Radio. You're a Windows Azure technical evangelist with Microsoft, and you really kind of focused on the developers to help them understand more about Windows Azure and applications and using the APIs. With a career in .NET, around the .NET framework, so that's good. That's heavy hitter there, right? Also working with devices like Kinect, robotics platforms with Windows Azure, and using all of those technologies around building solutions and applications. So welcome to the show.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. Doing good. Glad to have you on the show to talk about Windows Azure and, more importantly, how the infrastructure runs with the back end. So I have two questions for you that I always ask my guests that come on the show. The first question is, how'd you get started with computers? What was your first computer experience?
My first computer experience was probably similar to a lot of other people. I was just too young to play with a Commodore, or just too old. I can't remember which. But I do remember lusting after one that was up the street from me. But we picked up a Texas Instruments, I think it was a TI-99/4A. And the one thing that I did with it was really like learn how to write BASIC. I remember 10, 20, 30, 40, et cetera, with all my line numbers, just doing really, really basic programming. And what I built with that was kind of a text-based choose your own adventure game. The reason that I picked that choose your own adventure game as a project was you guys probably know, what is it, Coding Horror, Jeff Atwood's site. I'm sure all the IT guys know who Jeff Atwood is. He builds the servers that his apps run on. Well, the icon that he's got on his website is actually, it's an icon from a game called Hunt the Wumpus. And I remember putting that tape cassette into the tape cassette drive of my TI-99/4A and listening to it churn for 45 minutes at a time, and then I would have to flip it over. I don't know if you remember those days, but I'm really happy that we don't have to worry about that anymore. It's like listening to a modem for 45 minutes, and usually it would crash. So, but all that to play Hunt the Wumpus. So,
yeah, and I go back to the A and B floppies, 5 1/4 back there, right after punch cards. So,
yep.
You know, it goes back a ways, right? So,
exactly.
So great. Yeah, I kind of remember those days with the TI. They had a lot of good little products back then.
Yeah, they were fun.
So, you know, how'd you get, you talk about your experience getting into development, getting into IT. You know, you're really on the development side, but I think, you know, if we start talking about Windows Azure, we kind of see this hybrid, kind of an overlap between IT infrastructure and development .NET tools. So before we get into that conversation, how'd you get started with all this? How'd you get into development in IT?
I'll see if I can tell you the condensed version. I actually studied psych in college. So I was a psychology undergrad. I didn't study computers at all. The last computing that I did was probably 8 or 9 years old. I would use, you know, the Mac 2 SEs or whatever the heck they were called in the computer lab at Appalachian State. But I majored in psych, and my goal was to be a high school guidance counselor. And very ironic. But when I was in my program in graduate school, one of the classes that I thought sounded pretty interesting was it's called Hypermedia and Education. And around that time, I'd been playing with the web. I think I discovered the web probably two or three years after it kind of was born. And I discovered it because I was on a listserv. I used to go to a lot of electronic music parties. I think they called them raves back then. And the way we kept up with what was going to be going on was with these listservs. So I was on a couple of different listservs, and I remember one day somebody sent me a URL, and I printed it out and went to the computer lab, and I said, "What's this?" And the guy said, "What's the newest thing? It's the web. Let me show it to you." So he pulls up Mosaic, and I remember you guys probably have one of these on your desks, a little mouse with a laser in it. Well, I remember using X Windows, and that was the first time I saw this. This isn't a new thing at all, the whole laser-guided mouse. remember those mouse pads are pretty cool. They were mirrors. So I sat down, and I remember the website was the official Beastie Boys homepage, and I think it was hosted on the News and Observer website in Raleigh, North Carolina. Why, I have no idea. So I pulled that URL up, and I remember looking at the computer lab operator, and I said, do you realize the implications of this? There's like video, audio, text, everything I could think of is right here. And the guy was like, it's just the web. So I kind of grabbed a hold of it, and I changed my major in graduate school to instructional technology. And about a year later, I went to my advisor and said, hey, I'm not learning anything technological. What do you think about me quitting school and starting my career? He said, I think that would be a good idea. So I didn't finish my program. Ironically, my cousin is an instructional technologist and got the first PhD from the University of North Carolina. I think it was like a CTO ed. So he's like the CTO of his school system, but kind of runs in the family. So
very cool. That's a great story. You know, it's especially when, you know, IT and, well, even development with Windows Azure, but with IT, you know, undergoing a massive transformation here, as just as the internet did and changed the way people work and interact and play, and you know, cloud computing is changing the very landscape of IT. So, you know, there's now a demand for new apps anywhere, you know, anytime data access, new in-depth and analytical, you know, capabilities. Let's talk about some of this from an IT perspective, Windows Azure, and maybe walk us through, you know, infrastructure. Why do we care? Why do IT professionals care?
Mm-hmm. I can show you that. What I've done is prepared a I'm an evangelist, and we work in PowerPoint pretty frequently. So I've prepared a boring slide deck for you after communicating with the principal product manager for the Windows Azure Websites product. He's a great guy. His name is Nir Mishkowski. Nir did a talk at TechEd Europe, and I kind of paraphrased his talk into a couple of slides. So I can probably, it's probably better to look at these slides than actually talk about it. So let me pull those up and just kind of walk you through them real quick, and I'll tell you about the architecture of it, and that might clarify what it would mean to an infrastructure guy.
Absolutely. Great.
So this presentation, basically what this will cover is sort of the architectural underpinning of what the Windows Azure websites, you know, kind of how it looks like on the servers. And I'm just going to walk through a couple of different scenarios and kind of make sense of what it might mean to you if you're kind of an IT guy. So this is basically the slide that sort of shows what happens when you create a new website. So this is me creating a new website, doesn't exist. Here's what happens. First thing is the request comes into the Azure Load Balancer. That's obviously the big blue bar over on the right-hand side or left-hand side. That request comes into the network, comes into Azure, and it hits one of our ARR servers, which, you know, is part of IIS. That's basically our internal load balancer. That will actually make a request back to what they call the runtime SQL database. And if you're an IIS administrator, you probably know about editing the application host.config file or the sites.config or any of those config files. They've basically removed that piece of the architecture from the equation, and they store all of that stuff into a runtime SQL database. So if you can imagine, there's a huge database in Azure, and that database has a record of every website, what server it lives on, or what servers if you've got multiple instances, and it all kind of lives in SQL. Okay, so that basically saves a couple of records in the SQL, and then it provisions the site onto the web server. And there's hundreds of these in the data center. So it'll basically go out to the web server and provision a site, kind of create a block of space for the site stuff to run in. And then it makes a request to the storage controller. And this is where things get kind of interesting. That storage controller sits on top of Windows Azure Blob Storage. So what happens is all the files that somebody would upload either through FTP or Web Deploy, all those files get stored over in Windows Azure Blob Storage, and the way they do that is through this storage controller. And the storage controller is actually a Windows Azure Cloud Service, which you'll see in just a second on a subsequent slide. So all your files basically get stored onto the storage controller, and if for whatever reason you've created a website that has a database, this would be the database associated with your website. So over here, you've got your runtime SQL database, and over here you've got the database specific for your website. So that's kind of what happens when you create a new site. That's like me going new website in the portal. And then basically the data would flow back through the Azure Load Balancer. So what happens
so
if you
start, go ahead. Start at the very beginning? Let's say if I start at the very beginning, mm-hmm. I go up, I get my, you know, HTTP, aka MS / P try Azure. I go up and get my 90-day subscription to test it out. Mm-hmm. I log in to the portal, and I create a Windows Server 2012 virtual machine role. Mm-hmm. And then I add what do I add in there? I just provision IIS, and this all happens in the background, kind of.
Okay, well, this is, like, the VM offering is completely different from this, okay? Like, if you were to create a VM, they've got, it's sort of the same thing. They've got a bunch of underpinning for VMs. What'll happen is you'll create a disk image. That image will also live over in blob storage, and then the VM just loads up the OS software and the VM fires up. But this completely bypasses the whole notion of VMs. This doesn't run on a VM. These are all the different instances, which I guess are VMs, like, kind of at a very low level. But this is a situation where you actually don't even need a virtual machine. This is your website getting provisioned in the Windows Azure website's architecture. So this isn't your own VM where you have to go and provision IIS. That's the good thing about this. You don't have to worry about IIS. You just have to worry about your website. So for site administrators, this is nice because you don't have to worry about your load balancing. You wouldn't have to worry about editing your config files. You just have your developers push their site up to Windows Azure websites, and off they go. So
yeah, and that's why I was trying to clarify
right.
that question, because there is a little bit of guesswork there
right.
As to how we get to this stage. So that's great, and it does do a lot of things for us out of the box based on our hardware on the back end of our cloud services, like load balancing, right? So
exactly.
This is all good stuff, specifically when you're talking about website and website storage and web servers. Go ahead.
Exactly. So that's what happens when you go out and you say new website. Okay, so this is how it works if traffic comes into a site that's been created. So I've gone out and I've created BradyGaster.com. I've pushed my code, yada, yada, yada. And then my first hit comes in, just like before. The first hit hits the Azure load balancer. That hands it back to the Azure architecture, which hits one of the IIS ARR servers. That's your internal load balancer. Now, you see that we bypassed the database here. The reason we bypassed that is all the DNS records and everything on the inside have already been set up. That was set up when you actually created your site. So we can kind of bypass that, runtime SQL database. We can sort of skip that at this point, and then we just hand traffic off to the web server where the site's running, or to the different instances of that website where it might be running on multiple instances. So just a second ago, that's what it looks like if you've got one instance, and this is what it would look like if you've got three. And I've got server A, server A, server C. So just pretend that second one is server B. Sorry about that. And just like before, all the files are stored into the storage controller. Now, why is that important in a farm situation? Let's say one of those instances, let's say the second web server A starts to have issues. For whatever reason, that instance starts to hiccup. It might have a bad network card, who knows what the problem might be. One of those instances starts to go bad. In a traditional web hosting situation, you'd have to take all those files for your website, move them somewhere else, change the DNS, yada, yada, yada. There'd be all kinds of manual work you'd have to do. Well, the website's team have all sorts of monitoring components inside of Azure that are monitoring all those website instances, and when any one of them begins to have an issue or starts hiccuping, they'll take your site and they'll put it on a different instance for you automatically. So the whole notion of, using multiple instances so that you have fault tolerance, that's not necessarily why you'd want to do it. You'd want to use it for scale, because they know when those machines start to have problems, and they literally start to move the sites from one place to another. The good thing about that storage controller stuff is that the files don't live on the web server themselves. They live in blob storage. So whenever they change your site so that it's on server 42 and they want to move it to server 88, server 88 basically just starts answering the requests and starts serving up the files from blob storage. So all your files stay in one place all the time. It doesn't matter how many instances you have. Today we have three. If later on we decide that we want to give you unlimited scale and you want to have 33 servers, all your files are going to stay in one place. They're not going to be distributed across all 33 servers. They're going to live in blob storage. So that's the nice thing about that is if one site goes bad or one instance goes bad, A, they'll move it for you automatically. B, if it goes really bad, you're not going to lose any of your files because your files are going to be stored in blob storage. So this is just an example of how Windows Azure websites is built on top of the existing Windows Azure infrastructure. Like we talked about in the other show, one of the things that's nice is that the Windows Azure websites architecture basically runs as a Windows Azure cloud service. It's a real cloud service, but it just serves up a whole bunch of different websites. I think we're something like 27,000 sites now are actually hosted in Windows Azure websites. So that to me, I've maintained servers before. I'm not an IT guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I've maintained web servers before, and I've maintained build servers before. I would take this any day of the week over that because it's less maintenance for me to do. You just tell your developers, here's your publish file, just push stuff out and you're good to go. Let Azure do the rest of the work. So,
nice.
But moving right along, just show you one or two more slides here. And this is what I'm going to show you. This is our deployment process. So whenever a developer wants to push code, if they push code through FTP or web deploy, and web deploy is what you can do when you right click your website in Visual Studio and select publish, what will happen is all those files will be uploaded to the Azure Load Balancer, and then it hands them off to the deployment servers. You'll see that green box, that indicates that that's a cloud service. So these are all different cloud services built on top of the Windows Azure architecture. You send all those files up to the deployment servers, and those deployment servers then send them over to the storage controller where all the files are stored in a blob storage. So this is kind of the process whenever somebody wants to FTP or web deploy files, and then obviously it gets stored in a cloud drive right over there in blob storage. And then the last slide of this is what happens when a developer does a Git deployment. You'll see that we totally skip those deployment servers. That goes directly into the storage controller and gets stored directly into blob storage. That's not an implication that Git deployment is faster than the other two. That's not necessarily the case. It's just that with Git deployment, they were able to skip that first step and just go directly to the storage controller. So on paper, it looks like it might be more efficient, might be faster. It's not necessarily a guarantee. It's just a different process of deployment. But the nice thing is all your developers have to do is they have to push it up in whatever deployment methodology they choose, FTP, web deploy, Git, or if they want to push their code out to CodePlex or to GitHub, then they can push directly from their source control repository online. So all the management that you've had to do in the past or all the control whenever a developer has to, you know, push in a different way, you don't have to worry about that anymore. You just tell them push to Azure websites and you're good to go. So
if I wanted to go ahead and start up a web server, what would be my first thing to do for the first thing out of the chute?
For the first thing out of the chute, what you'd want to do is Windows Azure portal. What you would do is you would literally go down to there's a button down at the bottom left hand. It kind of looks like the pre-Windows 8 taskbar. You basically click the new button, and then that'll go up and it'll ask you, do you want a mobile service? Do you want a website? Do you want a VM? What do you want? You select website. You give it a name. You click OK. Bam, starts creating your site. From that cold site slide a couple slides back, that's the process that kind of happens next. It'll actually go out, provision your website, and I'll note it doesn't create a brand new web server. It just takes your website, takes one of their existing instances that's reserved for the Windows Azure Websites architecture, and provisions a new site directly in one of those backend boxes. Pushes all your code over to the cloud drive of the storage controller, and then the website starts serving up those files directly from blob storage. So there's no process of actually installing IIS, setting up 2012, yada, yada, yada. You say new website, bam, you're good to go. Well, it's kind of lame to walk through what this looks like, you know, audibly. So let me just show you what happens. Here you've got what it looks like whenever you create your brand new Windows Azure account. When you log into the portal, you probably won't have anything. So you can see I've got all these different things over here. There's quite a few more of these icons right now, but this is a demo account that I use, so it's actually not hooked up to all the different preview features. But if you think about the process that it takes to actually create a website, you have to get a server, install the OS, set up IIS, download the patches, blah, blah, blah. Here's how I do it in the portal. Say new, compute, website, quick create. And if I did create with database right here, it would actually ask me for like database connection information for, you know, it'll ask me what I want to call the database, what I want to call the user, the password I want to give it, and all that good stuff. And if I've got a client who wants something like, oh, I don't know, a CMS, I can go right here in a from gallery and I can just pick which CMS I want. And there's like 30 in there. I can pick Orchard, .NET Nuke, you name it. There's a bunch of PHP ones in here. So if I don't really want to do a whole bunch of work, I don't want to build a CMS from the very get-go, I can do from gallery and just get started with an existing app. But I'm just going to do a really quick demo app. So we'll just name this really quick demo app for the show. And this thing is going to turn green to tell me that that site currently doesn't exist with somebody else's account. So I'm good there. I'm going to click create website. It's going to go out. It's going to spin for just a second. It's going to say creating. Should take about tops 10 seconds. Any second it'll say running. There you go. Our site's ready. So now I've actually already got a site. Just to show you what that looks like, I want to click browse right here. And it's going to open up our site. And there's our site. We're already ready to go. Already answering requests on port 80. No big deal. So what I'll do is I'll just click on my website. And that'll open it up in what we call the dashboard. And this will show me all the important metrics. So it'll show me the number of requests that I've had over however long, server errors, data in, data out, CPU time, all that good stuff. You can see that right here it's going to tell me how many compute hours I've used in this month. That's kind of so you know how close you are to your limitation. But right over here is the important part. It's download publish profile. So I'm going to click that link. It's going to ask me to save a file to my hard drive. I'll just save that real quickly. Now this publish settings file is nothing more than just a gigantic XML file that just contains information about how to actually get data into that website. So I've got Visual Studio open right here with a new demo web. It's kind of an empty app. So what I'll do is I'll right click this guy and I'm just going to say add. I'll just do new item. I'll just do a quick HTML page. I'll call it default. And then right here I'll say just give it a quick little hello world. I'm good to go. I'm going to right-click this site, select Publish. You'll see this Import button right here. I'll click that button. I'll go to my desktop, which is where I saved that Publish settings file. I've got another one here I'm doing another demo with. So I'll select this guy, real quick website, click Open, and I'll click Publish. And what you'll see is the output window is going to open up and kind of show us the status, show us what's happening. It takes it probably, depending on the size of the site, it'll, you know, push in like 15, 20 seconds. The nice thing about this is, and it's going to open up, and that's kind of our default page, but the default page is actually set as default.htm, and mine's default.html, so I'm just going to type that URL in, hit enter, and there we go. We just created a new site, provisioned it, wrote some code, and published it in like a minute and a half. If you had to go and set up a VM or set up a physical server, install IIS on it, harden it, and all that good stuff, this would take you days, if not longer. the nice thing about this is it's definitely awesome for startup companies. They don't have to go through all that infrastructure work because we've already done all that infrastructure work for them. For companies that already have a pretty large infrastructure, this is nice because let's say you work for an agency and your agency manages 50 different sites. You could have all those sites running in Windows Azure websites for basically, I think it's probably something like $86 a month. You can move all these sites over to a reserved instance, and I'll show you what that looks like right now. I've got a free account right here, and this account is running on one shared instance. So if I go over here to scale, click this guy, what you'll see right here is that I'm running free. We've also got shared, and we've got reserved. If I were to click that, then I'm going to get the ability to select small, medium, or large. Okay, so the nice thing about a reserved instance is as soon as you go to reserved, all of your sites are now no longer in the shared environment, which is, you know, theoretically a cowboy land. Like we talked about in the other show, we've got process isolation in place, so one site's not going to mess up another site. And even if it does, they're monitoring all that, and they're going to move your site somewhere else if something bad happens. But if you're a control freak, for all intents and purposes, like me, and you want to have all your sites on your own box, you can go to reserved. You can pick which size box you want, and then even better than that, you can use this slider and slide it over, and you can go to however many boxes that you want. So if you know that you're going to have a site that's going to get pounded like crazy, you can scale up to three instances whenever you want. If you get pounded because you've got some sort of a sale going on, as soon as your sale's over, you can scale it back down. Nice thing about that is you pay for it when you need it and you don't when you don't. rather than having a room with however many servers sucking up however many dollars of real estate every month, et cetera, et cetera. This is a nice cost savings because you only have to scale when you want to. You don't have to scale in advance to be careful and to be prepared. So
that's awesome. So
yeah.
If you take your website on premise and put it up in the cloud, there's a way in which you can just port those files up and have that can they coexist? Can your on-premise IIS and your website farm on-prem, can it be hybrid with what's going on here?
It could be, and I guess the lame answer for that is it depends. Okay. And what I mean by that is, one of the hybrid situations, one of the hybrid situations that we talk about pretty frequently is I've got some data that needs to be PCI secure or something like that. And so I can't put that data in the cloud. I need to keep that. Yeah. I need to keep that data on-prem, but I want to have my website in the cloud because I've got all this, great capability. So I want to put my website out there and have my website communicate with my on-prem stuff. You can basically put your website out there, have your website communicate with the Windows Azure Service Bus, and have your on-prem systems in your enterprise also communicate with the Service Bus. Your Windows Azure website can send messages into the Service Bus that will then be handled by your on-prem environment. So the nice thing is you can tie the stuff together with your on-prem world however you want to. You can push up into the Service Bus and then into Windows Azure websites from your on-prem environment, or you can go the other way. Most people put their websites up in Azure and then they push it back down, or they share data with their on-prem environment using Service Bus. That's really the best way to do it.
That was one of the best demos I've seen on IT Time TechNet Radio. Good job. Nice work. Makes a lot more sense when you want to go and spin up a website without having, building out the server and IIS and everything in Windows Azure as a VM role. We can go ahead and just go right in there to those website services. After we get our subscription and go ahead and spin these up. It's interesting to see how you can actually get, the power of Visual Studio and moving that information up into this website and how this all works. So great, great overview of how to, spin up your own website. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Brady Gaster. He is the, or if not the, Windows Azure Technical Evangelist for Microsoft. So with that, appreciate you being on the show. Any last comments?
Not that I can think of. One thing that's come up a couple of times is the concept of VMs. One of the things that the team that I work for produces, we have this thing called the Windows Azure Training Kit, and it's actually a series of documents that basically explain how to do everything you can think of in Windows Azure. One of those documents actually covers the idea of creating a website using Windows Azure websites like I just showed you that communicates with a SQL server that's actually running on a VM. So don't think that kind of power isn't available to you. You can actually set up your own VMs if you want to go to that level. You can totally do that. But working specifically with the website stuff, I tend to just use the portal, my website, and use a Windows Azure SQL database. But if you do need that kind of control, you can totally do it. Like I said, it's the Windows Azure Training Kit. The documentation is actually open source. It's in GitHub. So if you, I could give you a URL for that for the show. But if anybody wants to learn anything about that, you can go on out there and start looking around. But if you need VMs, we've got VMs too. So we got Windows, Linux, SQL, the whole gamut. So.
Excellent, excellent. So if you want to check out Azure, go to aka.ms/try-azure and get your 90-day subscription. With that, Brady Haye, thanks a lot, and hopefully we'll have you back on IT Time Radio.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
And with that, it's a wrap.